Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly half-hour segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's illegal military occupation and colonization of their homeland? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? There are many ways to get involved. Here are a few examples. One, you could join the Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights by calling 617-491-2313. Two, you could join the Middle East Crisis Coalition by writing to crisismiddleeast@yahoo.com. Three, you could join the Israel-Palestine Task Force of United for Justice with Peace by writing to UJPIPTaskForce@yahoo.com. Four, if you are Jewish and prefer to join a Jewish group, there is the Boston chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, which you can contact either by calling 617-984-0532 or by visiting its website at vopj.org. Five, you could go to Palestine and help with the olive harvest or help Palestinians live their daily lives under occupation by contacting the group Boston to Palestine at its website, bostontopalestine.org. Six, you could work with the International Women's Peace Service in Palestine by applying to iwps-pal.org. Seven, you could go to Palestine under the Birthright Unplugged program, or eight, under the Needle in the Groove program by applying respectively at birthrightunplugged.org and needleinthegroove.org. Nine, you could join Bethlehem's Siraj Center's Palestinian Summer Celebration 2007 program. To register for that program or get more information, please visit the website sirajcenter.org/courses.htm. And ten, if you live in Cambridge, you can join a delegation of Cambridge residents who are planning to go to Bethlehem in August or November. Bethlehem is being strangled by Israel's illegal wall. It is completely isolated and is desperate for help to reopen the city once again to the outside world. For more information or to join the delegation, please write to bethlehemcambridge@gmail.com. It is Sunday, August 12, 2007. Here is a brief summary of the news for the week. President Bush's so-called peace conference was the lead item dominating international news. The conference will be chaired by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and take place somewhere in the United States. The date is still uncertain. The intention of the conference, as previously described by White House spokesman Tony Snow, is, quote, to sit down and try to find ways of building fundamental and critical institutions for the Palestinians that are going to enable them to have self-government and democracy. Last week, we saw quite a bit of to-ing and fro-ing around that proposition. According to an article published on Thursday by the Israel Policy Forum, Haaretz journalist Akiva Eldar revealed the existence of a plan developed by Israeli President Shimon Peres and presented to Prime Minister Olmert, calling for negotiated land swaps to reach agreement on the borders of a Palestinian state. In exchange for Israeli annexation of major settlement blocks, which Mr. Eldar estimated to be about 5% of the West Bank, but which in fact is much larger than 5%, Palestinians would receive an equivalent amount of territory in Israel itself. The same day, however, journalist Israel Harel assaulted Peres' proposal in the pages of Haaretz, calling it Peres' last sabotage. Mr. Harel said that it amounted to evacuating Jewish communities and claimed that it was not proper for a president to call for the establishment of a Palestinian state on 100% of the territories. Also on Thursday, former Israeli Foreign Minister Shlomo Ben-Ami described Mr. Bush's initiative as, quote, a last-ditch effort to salvage America's position in a region where it is on the defensive on all fronts. In an article published in the Lebanese paper The Daily Star, he criticized the Bush initiative, saying that, quote, If Mr. Abbas is to prevail, it will not be through gestures or a process focusing on institution building, however important these may be. Nothing less than a full-fledged peace agreement that meets the fundamental aspirations of Palestinian nationalism is likely to give him the popular legitimacy needed to confront the radicals, unquote, by which he meant Hamas. It is hard to tell at this point how the agenda of the peace process will evolve. Much will depend on Secretary Rice's determination to forge a real peace agreement before leaving office, and her ability to prevail against Vice President Cheney and Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams, the highly influential, omnipresent figure lurking in the background of every policy decision affecting Israel and Palestine. Both Cheney and Abrams are known for their antipathy for Palestinians. The weak Mr. Bush can hardly be expected to overrule Cheney and Abrams, and the weak Olmert government cannot be expected to deliver on the four major issues of borders, East Jerusalem, settlements, and the right of return of Palestinian refugees, particularly after taking the public position that Israel is willing to discuss general principles, but not substantive issues. Adding to Israeli negatives, Defense Minister Ehud Barak declared on Friday that meetings between Olmert and Abbas will not produce a peace agreement, and that he, Barak, will oppose the removal of any of the roadblocks promised by Olmert this week. Deliberations on the setting of the peace conference agenda are also expected to consider both the extent to which Saudi Arabia sticks to its demand for final status negotiations and the magnitude of U.S. perceptions in Washington of Saudi Arabia's potential contributions to cleaning up America's mess in Iraq. Regarding news on the ground, Egypt has moved its embassy from Gaza to Ramallah in the West Bank after the embassy was attacked. Hamas denied that its members had attacked the embassy and insisted that Egypt remain as the only mediator between Hamas and Fatah. Yediot Aharonot, Israel's largest circulating newspaper, reported that the Fatah party has formed armed cells in Gaza to fight against Hamas. The newspaper also reported that armed cells affiliated to Fatah started shooting in Gaza City and the south of the Gaza Strip against the private security forces of Hamas. On Tuesday, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs released a dismal report on the humanitarian situation in Gaza, covering the period July 7th to August 7th. Among its findings are the following. 1. The Karni crossing has been closed for 59 days since the 13th of June. 2. Shortages of raw materials, of which 90% come from Israel, have forced the closure of 600 Gaza-based garment factories, which provide employment to more than 25,000 Palestinians. 1 million pieces of clothing worth $12 million, which were scheduled to be exported over the last 8 weeks, will not be exported as a consequence of the closures. 90% of garment products are normally exported to Israel. 3. Construction materials are still not allowed into Gaza. As a result, 11 tile-making factories, 30 concrete-making factories, 140 marble-making factories, and 145 brick-making factories, which collectively employ 2,500 Palestinians, are coming under severe pressure. More than 90% of these factories have closed down and laid off their staff. 4. In the 2007 season, farmers are likely to cultivate less than 125 acres due to severe shortages of raw materials, such as fertilizers and pesticides, and the unlikelihood of export. During the 2006 season, by comparison, more than six times that amount, or 750 acres of a variety of crops, were cultivated. If the closure continues, the estimated loss to the agricultural sector this season will be more than $12 million. Large quantities of vegetables, including tomatoes, cucumbers, and sweet peppers, are being sold in the local Gazan markets for very low prices instead of being exported. And 5. More than 1,600 containers of non-food items, including clothing, furniture, and spare parts, which were scheduled to enter Gaza in the last 8 weeks, are kept on hold at Israeli freight terminals and warehouses, while shippers are charged storage fees of $50 per day by the International Shipping Company and $300 per month by the Israeli Port Authority. At the same time, none of the 500 empty containers stranded in Gaza since mid-June have been shipped back out, resulting in cumulative charges to commercial shippers of $1 million. After visiting the Gaza Strip, the Deputy Commissioner General of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency issued a statement condemning the ongoing Israeli closure of the Gaza Strip. Also in Gaza, the last of the 6,000 Palestinians who were stranded in Egypt were finally allowed into Gaza on Thursday. The vast majority of this group had gone to Egypt for medical treatment when Israel closed all border crossings in and out of the Gaza Strip in June. At least 32 have died while waiting to re-enter Gaza. Elsewhere in Palestine, on Tuesday, Israeli settlers in El Khalil, known as Hebron in this country, set fire to a mosque and prevented the fire services from reaching the blaze. Israeli soldiers, to whom the firefighters appealed for help, refused to intervene and end the settlers' assaults. At dawn on Wednesday, Israel's occupation forces invaded the West Bank city of Jenin and Wadi al-Farah, south of the city, searched and fired randomly at houses, pretending that they were looking for suspected militants. They renewed their invasion of Jenin during the day on Thursday. No injuries were reported. On Friday morning, the forces attacked with batons and rifle butts a group of 100 Palestinian villagers in the village of Salamona, south of Bethlehem. The villagers, joined by internationals and Israeli peace activists, were non-violently protesting against the illegal annexation of their lands. One Israeli peace activist was arrested and taken to an unknown location. The occupation forces then went to the West Bank town of Bil Ain on Friday afternoon, where they fired sound bombs, tear gas, and rubber-coated steel bullets at a group of non-violent demonstrators protesting against the building of Israel's illegal wall, injuring 9 civilians, including 2 internationals, 2 paramedics, and 5 children. The soldiers also damaged a vehicle belonging to an Al Jazeera camera crew and kidnapped 2 internationals and 3 Palestinians. Today, we are especially pleased to have as our featured guest Dr. George Jackerman, tenured professor of philosophy and dean of graduate studies at Birzeit University, Palestine's most prestigious university. Professor Jackerman is a founding member of the Palestinian NGO network and co-founder and board member of Muwatin, the Palestinian Institute for the Study of Democracy. Among his many publications, he has edited the book After Oslo, New Realities, Old Problems, published by the Pluto Press in London. He joins us now by telephone link to Palestine. Good afternoon, Professor Jackerman.
Yeah, good afternoon, good morning too.
Thank you. Welcome to This Week in Palestine. Could you give us your view of the internal political situation in Palestine?
Well, as you probably know, since the conflict started in Gaza in mid-June, we've ended up with a situation where basically there are 2 de facto governments, one in Gaza, one on the West Bank. And the propaganda warfare between both sides continues. The discourse, I'm afraid, unfortunately, is still very shrill. And there are accusations and counter-accusations on both sides of arrests and violation of human rights. This is the picture as it exists now. But in the future, the picture might change depending on various factors, including political factors and political changes that might possibly take place.
The calm in the streets of Gaza has recently been broken by street fighting between Hamas forces and Fatah forces, which have recently infiltrated Gaza. Is there any room for reconciliation?
Well, there have been several attempts to try to bridge the gap and bring about a rapprochement between both sides. Some groups, actually within Fatah, have been working at this, including some factions within the PLO, some representatives from the PLC. So far, these efforts have not succeeded. And I think there's probably some degree of reluctance, I would say, on the part of Mahmoud Abbas to bring about reconciliation at the present time. I think, objectively speaking, from his perspective, he'd like to show some degree of success before a rapprochement takes place. But this is highly problematic, because success means either success on the political front with a credible political process, or let's say the release of several hundred, perhaps several thousand prisoners, an issue that is uppermost on the mind of most Palestinians. But so far he hasn't achieved much, and I think he's probably reluctant to try to start a dialogue from a position that he probably regards as being not sufficiently strong.
Well, Hamas has called for unconditional reconciliation efforts, and Mr. Abbas will only engage if the situation is returned to what it was before Hamas took over Gaza. Is that an irreconcilable difference in your view?
No, I think this is a reconcilable difference. Actually, Hamas has expressed willingness, at least according to some spokespeople, that they're willing to go to the position before the conflict. Some ideas were aired out among those that have tried to intercede, including, as I mentioned, some Fatah members. For instance, to hand over the various headquarters of various security services that they have occupied to a quote-unquote a national committee. But as I mentioned, I think Mahmoud Abbas and his advisors have so far been reluctant to accept such suggestions. I think for them the timing is important, not the principle of it. I think ultimately there will be a form of dialogue and some form of resolution. The question is when, and also on what terms.
Well, are there any prospects, really, to form a coalition government of national unity with Hamas and Fatah, and then sell it to the international community?
Well, the experience of the Palestinian government, if one means a government composed of Fatah, Hamas, plus other representatives from the Palestinian Legislative Council, the PLC, has not been successful, in the sense that both the United States and Israel, and to some degree the EU, European Union, have not changed their position on the issues. And there is no reason to believe that such a change will come about if one is formed. But I think other solutions will probably be found. For instance, former Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh expressed his willingness to abdicate his position. And various ideas were put forth by some Hamas spokesmen about that their willingness to form a government composed of independents, meaning non-Fatah and non-Hamas. There are ideas like that floating around. But as I mentioned, I think as yet the time is not exactly right. My opinion is that Mahmoud Abbas would like to negotiate from a position of strength. And this means effectively, either he has some peace deal with Israel that he can sell to Palestinian public opinion, or some form of achievement, some other form of achievement. And so far, in my opinion, he has not reached that stage. So I would say that we would have probably to wait until the meeting, which has also been called the conference, that was called by President Bush, most likely that it will take place in early November. We might have to wait to see if there are any concrete results that, from Mahmoud Abbas's point of view, can help him negotiate from a position of strength.
Quite so. What the, in your view, what use is that peace conference? I mean, does Palestine stand to gain anything from that conference?
Well, first, let me point out that since the breakdown of the Camp David talks in July 2000, for a period of 7 years, there has been no political process to speak of. Now, there are attempts now for various reasons, both domestic, meaning relating to the United States, Israel, and also the Palestinian side, and also regional, the issue of alliances in the region vis-a-vis Iran and Syria. To try to at least bring about some degree of movement on the Israeli-Palestinian front. Now, I think one should approach the issue with a certain degree of healthy skepticism. Given the failure of various attempts in Japan, I note also that President Bush called it a meeting rather than a conference. Now, a meeting suggests that it may be followed by other meetings, whereas a conference suggests a certain degree of finality. I think the approach of President Bush, as it came in his speech when he announced the meeting, suggests that the American side is cautious about possible results. Nevertheless, it remains to be seen what happens. I think Mahmoud Abbas, to some degree, is in a position of strength. It is not likely that Israel, the state of Israel, or any future government, will find a more acceptable partner on the Palestinian side than Mahmoud Abbas. If he cannot deliver something credible to the Palestinians, then I think that the issue of peace between Israelis and Palestinians will probably be a long drawn out affair with the continued conflict in the foreseeable future. This is an opportunity for the Israeli side, but I'm not quite certain that actually that they will take it, given past experience.
But for Mr. Abbas to be able to show concrete progress, that peace meeting or conference has to address the substantive issues. And almost yes. Everybody from in the United States and from Israel has mentioned that they will not discuss substantive issues. So there remains the wild card, which I think is Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has mentioned that it is willing to participate on condition that it be about substantive issues. So with that in mind, what is your perception of the possibility of coming out with anything from that meeting or conference?
Well, first of all, I think Saudi Arabia will not participate unless they know ahead of time that the meeting or the conference will bring about results that, in their opinion, they can defend. Now, you have to keep in mind also that Mahmoud Abbas has been calling for the past 2 years for the discussion of what they also process called final status issues, namely the borders, refugees, Jerusalem, and also sovereignty. Now, the main lesson to be drawn from the Oslo process is that it left all the main issues until the very end within a balance of power that's favorable to Israel. I think this is the moral that Mahmoud Abbas drew. Now, also most recently, he has been insisting on arriving at an agreement, even if in broad terms, on the end results of any political process that may possibly start. So far, there have been different, the Israeli side has been reluctant, but there have been different voices coming from different parties. The former position of the Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, has gone in through stages. First, he said that he would rather not discuss the so-called finance issues, but then he touted the idea of arriving at a broad agreement of principles, which is not clear what it means. But his deputy prime minister, Haim Ramon, who is in charge also of negotiations, said that he, in his opinion, Israel should discuss these issues. The Israeli side, to sum up, is not entirely clear as to where it stands. Now, as I said, Mahmoud Abbas is now to some degree in a strong position because the Americans understand and the Israelis understand that they will not have, from their perspective, a better partner for negotiations. Hence, in my opinion, he can insist on the specific terms that he has been calling for. And otherwise, there should not necessarily be a political process that replicates the Oslo process, which has reached a dead end.
So we certainly wish it were not so. Yet Olmert's agreement to reach an agreement on general principles Sounds a lot like Oslo, where if you read the Oslo Agreement, at the beginning it has some great principles, and then what follows negates all the principles that were at the beginning of the agreement. And so unless specific issues are addressed, maybe they should not be cast as final status issues. Maybe they should use perhaps some creative language and call it the governing principles of any agreement, for example, or something like that. It appears that Americans have to support Palestine's quest for nationhood. What should American people need to know in order to support Palestine's quest for nationhood?
Yes, indeed. You see, the problematic part has been throughout since the beginning of the Oslo process and the first agreement on principles in 1993, followed by the establishment of the Palestinian Authority in 1994. The main issue, the main problem has been that the Israelis and the Palestinians were left alone. The Americans were mostly involved in bringing about pressure on the Palestinian side. This has been admitted by, for instance, Dennis Ross, who was chief negotiator at the time. In one of his recent writings, he mentioned that the United States made a mistake in not pressing Israel further, for instance, on the issue of settlements. By the way, which the settlements continue down to the present day, which is a very explosive issue from a Palestinian perspective. Now, the problem, the main issue, is that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has become a political football in the Israeli arena, subject to the local and electoral and modest interests of various Israeli parties, in the absence of any external pressure on the State of Israel or any one government to be serious about the peace process. This has, in my opinion, been the main failing of the United States as a quote-unquote mediator in the region. I'm afraid that the same scenario might be replicated now in any future negotiations. And if the scenario is repeated, I think there's much to look for in terms of results.
Well, let's be hopeful that the United States, in the waning days of Mr. Bush's presidency, he might find the courage to do what he should have done a long time ago. Perhaps on that note, we can end this discussion. Although I wish we could go on for at least another hour. It certainly is a topic that requires much more discussion. And I hope that you will be able to join us again on another edition of This Week in Palestine. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Jacob. Pleasure.
Okay. Thank you.
You have been listening to Dr. George Jackerman, tenured professor of philosophy and dean of graduate studies at Beer Sheva University, Palestine's most prestigious university. Professor Jackerman is a founding member of the Palestinian NGO Network, co-founder and board member of Mawatan, the Palestinian Institute for the Study of Democracy. And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sherif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved now in the good fight for peace in Palestine and in Israel. Thank you.